Oh yeah, it is back on. Hello everybody and welcome to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Look Back and Animat's Reviews. Now, if this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, well, my God, let me tell you, dude, in this episode, you are going to have a blast with this one, because I got some crazy stories for you today. And, for example, for this episode, what's going to be happening, I'm going to be discussing about the Annie Awards and the results that came out of it from there. Then afterwards, we will be talking about the directorial debut of master animator Glenn Keane. Then afterwards, we will be talking about Kim Possible, and she is going to be coming back in a whole new way. Then afterwards, we will be talking about Butch Hardman recently releasing a video that really is kind of exploding news. And then finally, we're going to end things off with Animat's Pick of the Week. Now, if you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then all you have to do is head on down to Filmbook, which is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in as the subject line. And so, for our first story that we have right over here, we are going to be talking about one of the biggest animation news that actually occurred last week. And not just one of the biggest news, but also the biggest night of animation of the year. And I am talking, of course, about the Annie Awards, or more specifically, the 45th annual Annie Awards that has occurred last week. And I decided to go and check out the entire show myself to see what is going on, and they kept it simple and sweet, and it really was such a blast to go and watch. And of course, there are plenty of memorable moments that did happen in the show. And there are several moments that I could really think on top of my head. Of course, there is Tom Kenny and Jorge Gutierrez. They know how to put on a show. Tom Kenny with such amazing high energy, always a blast whenever he's on stage. And also Jorge Gutierrez, who decided to come in with a lucha mask, kind of like a tie-in to his recent animated short, which is Son of Jaguar. Definitely funny, but he sure knows how to put on a show. There's also other moments, including the crew of Samurai Jack, with the exception of one woman, decided not to come at the Annie Awards. Like, nobody was there. None of the art directors, none of the production designers, not even Genndy Tartakovsky was even at the Annie Awards for some reason or another. I have no idea. Then there is also, oh yeah, there's one storyboard artist that just refuses to leave. Like, he was probably a little too honored that he actually won an Annie Award. And then also, of course, there is a tear-jerking tribute to the late and great June Foray. Now, all this and more actually happened at the Annie Awards, and you can actually go ahead and check it out on their YouTube channel, on the official Asifa Hollywood YouTube channel, where they have uploaded many of the great highlights that actually did happen at this year's Annie Awards, including the entire show itself, which went on for a little less than 2.5 hours. So if you are an animation fan, then you should do yourself a favor and go ahead and subscribe to the Asifa Hollywood YouTube channel. Now, with all that said, that's just a little piece of the award show itself. Now, let's actually go ahead and move on to the actual awards. Like, which ones are the big winners? Well, let me start things off by going into the television categories. And from there, there are a lot of major winners. And there is a little bit of a variety that actually did happen. First and foremost, the ones that actually did get away with the most Annie Awards is Disney Mickey Mouse, which every year it seems like it is an Annie's favorite, and that show would always walk away with a few Annies, so no surprise that that one actually got 3 Annie Awards. And then you also got Samurai Jack, the final season that aired in 2017, that actually walked away with 3 Annie Awards as well. But the one that actually got the big Annie Awards, one for Best Writing and one for Best Animated Series for a general audience, would actually be for Rick and Morty. However, there are plenty of other shows that actually did win an Annie Award as well. Some of these include DreamWorks Trollhunters, there was SpongeBob SquarePants, there was Wee Bear Bears, there was Octonauts, and there are plenty of other shows that did get an Annie Award as well, but those are pretty much the main ones. And then, of course, there are a variety of other projects that actually did win an Annie Award, of course. There was War for the Planet of the Apes that actually won for Best Character Animation in a Live Action Production. There is also Dear Basketball that won for Best Animated Short. There was Poles Apart that won for Best Student Film. Let me see if there's anything else. Oh yeah, there is a commercial called June that won for Best Animated Commercial. And of course, there was also Revolting Rhymes that won for Best Animated Special Production, which I would like to point out that both Dear Basketball and Revolting Rhymes, they're actually competing at the Oscars for Best Animated Short. However, those are just the television categories. And yeah, there is an interesting variety that is going on right over there. But the biggest one that people are focusing on is actually, there is one more thing, just a step back a little bit, there is one more big thing that actually did happen, is actually Cuphead being a big winner, not only receiving a Special Achievement Award, but it also won another Annie for Best Character Animation in a Video Game, so we can pretty much say right now that Cuphead is a two-time Annie Award-winning video game. Okay, but anyways, going back to what I was talking about, the biggest thing that actually did come out of the Annie Awards, and probably the one thing that people took out of this, is actually regarding in the movies category, where Pixar's Coco did not win, but it actually was, like, it dominated the Annie Awards this year, where Coco actually walked away with 11 of the 12 Annies that are specifically categorized for movies, and every single one, Coco was just the winner. It's like, okay, this is best something for a movie, it is Coco, like, bam, 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 winning every single one. Now, from there, it is a little bit controversial, and it actually did receive a little bit of mixed results. There are some people that are really happy for Coco, that it really did come out as a big winner, and that it really did prove itself to be such a magnificent animated feature where it deserved to receive all these awards one after another. However, on the other side, though, there are some people that do feel like Coco did come out as too big of a winner, where Coco just feels like it kind of rigged the Annies, where it got literally every single one, and it did not even give a single chance to any other animated feature that was nominated, where there literally was no other winner than just Coco. And that's where people feel like it's a little bit upsetting and a little bit disappointing that there was only one big Annie's winner and that there was no other animated feature that really did receive any other award. Now, from there are a lot of people that actually did draw parallels to what actually happened a couple of years ago at the Annie Awards when it was Inside Out that was actually the big winner at the Annie Awards. And if you guys remember a couple of years ago, what happened with Inside Out was that it actually won a total of 10 Annie Awards, so pretty much the grand majority of it. However, the only one that it actually did not win was Best Animated Effects, which that actually went to The Good Dinosaur. But it didn't necessarily make things better because that was another Pixar movie, and it pretty much showed that during that year as well, Pixar pretty much dominated the Annie Awards. So that's pretty much what we are seeing right over here with Coco. And after analyzing all this, like, what pretty much happened with Coco and all that kind of stuff, some of you might be wondering which side of the coin would I would be regarding if I'm happy for Coco or if I'm mad at Coco regarding this. And honestly, I don't know really what to say, but honestly, in this case right over here, in this case with Coco, like, I do feel like I might have to go a bit on the defensive side. Because there's one big argument that I have to do with Coco that really would explain a lot about why it actually did win all those awards. And if I may ask, okay, if Coco did not deserve to get all of those awards, then let me ask you, what else? I mean, seriously, that's kind of the big thing with Coco. It's that this year, there really isn't much competition. And of course, it wouldn't be that surprising that Coco actually did win by a landslide compared to literally every single other animated feature that it was pretty much up against. Like, seriously, you have to think about what they pretty much did and what the others have done as well. And if you look back in the previous years where this little controversy actually did occur, like probably the biggest example would be How to Train Your Dragon. That was one that movie literally won every single Annie Awards, and it was really controversial. But the biggest part that really did make it controversial was the fact that the other movies that was released at the time did not win any of them, and those were movies that deserved to have some. I mean, How to Train Your Dragon was released in the same year as films such as Toy Story 3, Tangled, Despicable Me, Megamind, and so much more. And they didn't even give any of those a chance, or didn't even give them much attention. In fact, the grand majority of the nominations was just How to Train Your Dragon, and they barely gave any notice to movies like Tangled or even Toy Story 3, despite the fact that critics would unanimously agree that even though How to Train Your Dragon is great, they would say that like the best animated feature of 2010 would have to be Toy Story 3. And again, there was a little bit of controversy at the same time when Inside Out was the big winner at the Annies, because with that one, there was a little bit of competition, not as much as in 2010 with How to Train Your Dragon and Toy Story 3 and Tangled and all that kind of stuff, but there was a bit of competition where maybe there should have been other movies that should have gotten the Annie Award. Like, for example, considering that Inside Out was released in 2015, then it would have been nice if movies such as The Peanuts Movie or even Anomalisa, which was really big during awards season at that time, like, it would have been nice to see them actually get some awards, but it was mostly Inside Out pretty much hogging everything, and literally every other award show as well. Like, it was one of those movies where if it's in Best Animated Feature, then you know who's gonna be the big one. Where, now let's go back onto Coco. Now, that one actually won, and let me ask you guys, did it really have that much competition? Because let's think about it. At least in terms of the mainstream animated features, there really wasn't much. I mean, Coco was pretty much up against movies such as The Boss Baby, or Ferdinand, or Cars 3, or even, well, what else was there? The Star. Yeah, there was that. There was also Despicable Me 3. There was Smurfs Lost Village, and all that kind of stuff. I mean, really, there wasn't much competition, and it makes it a lot easier for Coco to actually win those awards. And I mean, sure, like, some people would say that some of the independent films might actually be some legit competition for Coco, but even at that, like, Coco still really went up and beyond with what it did. And that is also another explanation onto why is it that Coco would actually win all those awards. Because there are plenty of these categories where it is for sure that it would win by a landslide. I mean, I think it's safe to say that everybody was pretty much expecting that Coco would be the one that would win Best Animated Feature. And it really was the year that Coco was one of the animated features that was nominated the most at this year's Annies, alongside with The Breadwinner. And many of those, it is for sure that they would win without a doubt, because it really is the best among its category. Like Best Editing, considering that it is directed by one of the master editors in an animated feature, Lee Unkrich, like, of course it would win that. Best Music, of course it would go ahead and win that. Best Voice Acting, of course it would go ahead and win with Anthony Gonzalez's performance as Miguel. What else is there? Best Character Animation. I would think about the scene of when, Oh, yeah. There was the scene when they would sing Pollo Loco, and then you would think about the dancing that Hector did during that show. Like, yeah, it would definitely win that. And so much more. Like, a lot of these nominations, yeah, Coco deserved to win those. And, I mean, I'm sure that a lot of people would have liked to see some of the other animated films to actually get away with an Annie Award. Like, for example, Coco wasn't the only critically praised animated feature that was released back in 2017. There was, of course, also the Lego Batman movie, and Captain Underpants did actually get some good reviews as well. But even at that, they were pretty much nominated in the categories that it was no, that there would be no doubt about it that Coco would be the winner. And that's kind of the big thing, is that I think we pretty much all expected that Coco would walk away with a lot of these Annie Awards. Like, they would win the majority of the movies in the Annie Awards, but we didn't expect it to be that big. Like, of course, like I said before, it would definitely deserve many of these awards, like Best Character Animation, Best Music, Best Editing, Best Voice Acting, and all that kind of stuff. But it is a bit unexpected that it would pretty much go ahead and get every single one of them. Now, with all that said, there is actually one category that Coco actually did not win. And there is actually a very good reason. It's because this is the category that Coco could not get nominated into, and that is Best Independent Animated Feature. Pixar, I'm sorry, but you're not an indie. And that one was actually given to The Breadwinner. And I mean, that is probably, much like Coco winning Best Animated Feature, it is kind of predictable that The Breadwinner would be the big winner in that category right over there. And honestly, if I would like to see some changes, if there would be less awards for Coco to actually win and given to others, honestly, that would actually be one thing that I would like to see is, I wish The Breadwinner would have actually gotten a little bit more awards. Like, if I'm not saying like to walk away with like a whole bunch or try to split 50-50 with Coco, but I mean like at least some. If there is a ratio like Coco got away with 9 Annies and The Breadwinner walked away with 3, then I would have probably been happy. Like, if The Breadwinner walked away with a few, like per se, Best Writing, or actually what would have been a legendary moment at the Annie Awards, or for any award show possible, for me, I feel like Best Directing should have actually gone to Nora Toomey, since that would actually make her the first ever solo female director to win Best Director at the Annie Awards. In fact, let me actually just go ahead and double check on the directing category. Yeah, Nora Toomey was actually nominated. Now, of course, that's actually a great first big step, but if she would have actually won, that would have been such a legendary moment and a huge great moment for the Annies and in animation in general, and it really would have put Nora Toomey in probably a legendary status. Not to say that she didn't. I mean, like, she already put herself in a great legendary status as it is for her work on The Breadwinner, of course. But it would have been nice if the Annie Awards would have probably recognized that. And that's probably one of the changes that I could have done for the Annie Awards, is maybe give a little bit more to The Breadwinner. And especially, that animated film was absolutely beautiful, and it could have at least deserved a few more awards for what it has actually done. And especially coming from an animation studio like Cartoon Saloon, you know, it really is a beautiful animated film that it is something that truly does deserve it. And I'm sure that there would be people that would argue as well that another animated feature that should have gotten a few awards or at least a bit more recognition, some people would actually argue regarding Loving Vincent, since that one, as you guys probably know, is known to be the first ever oil-painted animated feature where every frame is actually a painting. And yeah, I could actually see the argument where some of these should have actually been given to Loving Vincent, at least in some of the individual animation categories. But then again, it was pretty much up with some tough competition, especially with some of the achievements that Coco has done. And I'm not 100% sure if Loving Vincent was actually nominated in a lot of these anyways, so it's hard to pretty much know. But yeah, I mean, I know this is a little bit controversial that Coco would actually be a big winner in this case, but for the most part, I would say that it is well-deserved. And one thing that I can guarantee to you is that for next year, in the next Annie Awards, I don't think this thing is actually going to happen again, because in 2018, we're going to have some really big animated features that it's going to make it some pretty tough competition at the Annie Awards, where this is going to be the year where we will see animated features like The Incredibles 2, Wes Anderson's Isle of Dogs, Wreck-It Ralph 2, Early Man, and so much more, where we are going to see some animation studios really bringing out their A game and also bringing out some highly anticipated animated features, where I'm sure next year with the Annie Awards, they will try to spread them out a little bit, where a lot of these are going to be handed to some animated features, like, one way or another. But either way, I just would like to say congratulations to the entire crew at Pixar and the entire Coco team, along with plenty of the other animation studios and the filmmakers and all that kind of stuff. Just a big congratulations for their big win at the Annies, and also congratulations to all the nominations, to the nominees who did work hard and actually did get some recognition at the Annie Awards. So, with all that said, it definitely was an interesting blast this year, and we shall all see you guys next year. Now, our next story that we have right over here, we're going to be talking about an animated feature that will be released on Netflix. But the big significance about this one is actually going to be the director. And let me just say, my God, is it about time that we got this guy directing an animated feature. Now, what I'm talking, of course, is going to be an animated film created by Pearl Studios called Over the Moon. And if I may go here in my source in Variety, it says here that the story is going to be a musical adventure feature film about a girl who builds a rocket ship and blasts off to the moon in hopes of meeting a legendary moon goddess, which apparently is based on an ancient Chinese folklore. It's pretty much based on a pretty popular myth from the country. But the big significance about Over the Moon is actually going to be the director of the feature, and that will be from none other than legendary Disney animator Glenn Keane. And what a coincidence, considering that Glenn Keane recently won an Annie Award for his latest animated short that he worked with Kobe Bryant and John Williams, Dear Basketball. Now, Glenn Keane actually did state about taking the job to do Over the Moon for Netflix. He says that, "I am powerfully drawn to characters who believe the impossible is possible. Over the Moon has just such a heroine as its centerpiece. The compelling script by Audrey Wells has tremendous heart and humor that called to me, and I had to respond. I'm honored to bring the story to life alongside my producer, Jeannie Rim. We are both looking forward to create a wonderful film in partnership with Melissa Cobbs at Netflix and Pei Lin Chu at Pearl Studios." And yes, just to give you guys a little bit of context, of course, the people that are going to be working in there, like Glenn Keane stated, Audrey Hells is going to be writing the script for this film. And some of the producers will involve Jeannie Rim. She also did producing in Dear Basketball. And also the executive producer will be from Janet Yang. And as for the songs, they will actually be written by Christopher Curtis, Marjorie Duffield, and Helen Park. Now, Of course, to give you guys a little bit of context about Pearl Studios, this is actually a Shanghai-based animation studio that is pretty recent, and they did actually do some collaborations with DreamWorks Animation, or specifically Oriental DreamWorks, which I think now they're named something else. Pearl Studios actually did give out a hand to work on Kung Fu Panda 3, and they are currently working onto the animation of the upcoming DreamWorks Animation film Everest. And now it seems that they're going to be doing the animation for, I was about to say Dear Basketball, but that's not the case. It's actually going to be for Over the Moon. Now, the one thing that I have to say about this entire news, when I first saw that Glenn Keane will actually be directing this animated feature, the only thing that came across my head is just, my God, is it about time that Glenn Keane is directing an animated film. I mean, of course, he has done a lot of directing jobs recently, especially with the animated shorts like Dear Basketball and Duet, but honestly, it's about time that we finally see Glenn Keane actually take his hands to go and actually work on an animated feature where we're going to get a movie that says that it will be directed by Glenn Keane, considering that he is a very admirable and very prominent figure in the field of animation. Of course, you guys know him as the animator of such legendary characters as Disney, the legendary characters at Disney, including Ariel from The Little Mermaid, the Beast from Beauty and the Beast, Merahute from Rescuers Down Under, Aladdin, Pocahontas, Tarzan, and so much more. Like, this guy really left a huge impact into Disney and the characters that he created. Like, this is one of those people that actually did make animation look like it is a true art form. And it's about time that we finally see it happen onto something like an entire animated feature like Duet. And he already has proven that he can also work with story as well, especially when you look into his animated shorts like Duet and Dear Basketball. The way that he would take these stories and create something beautiful out of it. However, it is true that most of these stories, it's the kind that really lets the animation explain for itself. Or maybe like in the case of Dear Basketball, where it's more Kobe Bryant explaining it, but the visuals really do help. And on top of that, Glenn Keane actually did do a little bit of directorial work at Disney. Not necessarily as a director, but the closest thing was really as an animation director, where he actually helped create the visuals of Tangled in order for the look of the film to stay true to the works of the Disney Renaissance, despite the fact that it is computer animated. And he did really work that tremendously, and you can actually tell that the influence is still there when Disney would make movies such as Frozen or even Moana, that the influence that Glenn Keane had to go and try to craft the animation to stay true to the classic hand-drawn animation, it is still there. And honestly, I am actually pretty excited to see what he has in store with Over the Moon. However, I do have one big question, though, regarding what's going to happen with Over the Moon. I'm just wondering, though, what's going to happen with Over the Moon? What's going to be the animation medium that they're going to use? I don't, I tried looking a little bit into it. I can't really find an answer. Rather, if Glenn Keane is going to make a hand-drawn animated film or if he's going to make a computer animated feature out of this. Like, that one I am actually a bit curious about, because I'm sure it'll be pretty exciting news for animation fans if Glenn Keane is going to make something hand-drawn with Over the Moon, but it wouldn't be too surprising either if, because Pearl Studios is involved, they gotta go and make this a computer animated film. But that will remain to be seen. But the fact that Glenn Keane is a director in this project, I do feel like the movie will be in good hands regardless of what's going to happen, because he does know how to make either hand-drawn animation or computer animation truly look beautiful. And with the kind of story that it is, I'm sure it could definitely look fantastic. And plus the fact that Glenn Keane actually did offer a little bit of concept art that he actually did work onto Over the Moon already. I mean, they definitely do look great. And you do see the main character who's ready to go onto the rocket and go to the moon. And yeah, she definitely does look beautiful. And regardless of the medium, I do hope this movie will look fantastic. But yeah, this is actually pretty exciting news that Glenn Keane is actually going to be directing an animated feature. It's too bad that it's not going to be the kind that will be released in theaters worldwide, but hey, we are getting it at Netflix, and hopefully they will make something great out of it. So if you guys are excited to go and check out Over the Moon, then all you have to do is just wait until 2020 when it's going to be released on Netflix, but actually be released in theaters in China. Now, our next story that we have right over here, this is actually one of the biggest animation news that happened this week, and it really got people really excited for this to actually come out, or to see the grand return of this character. It's been a while since we've seen some of her adventures, but now we can officially say that she is back. And that is actually with Kim Possible. Yes, the Disney Channel actually announced that they are going to be making a live-action movie based on the hit animated series from Disney Channel, Kim Possible. Now, currently, Disney is looking to go and find the cast of who's going to be playing characters such as Kim Possible herself, along with other characters such as Ron Stoppable, the computer genius Wade, and so many other characters, including the villains. But for now, they actually did get the writers and even the directors and also some of the producers as well. It actually did stay right over here in my source here, Variety, once again, saying that the live-action movie script will be written by the series creators Mark McCorkle and Robert Schooley, who will also be executive producers. Josh Kagan will also write the script, and Zane Devine is also serving as an executive producer. The movie will also be co-directed and co-produced by Adam B. Stein and Zap Lipofsky. Now, on top of that, we also do have a little quote here coming from the Executive Vice President of Original Programming for Disney Channel Worldwide, and that is from Adam Bonnet, which he actually states that Mark and Bob created an enduring character and kids all over the world found a friend in her, an average girl who just happens to spend her off-school hours thwarting evil villains. Although Kim Possible can do anything, kids and tweens found that the animated redhead was just like them. As we embark on the fun challenge of making Kim and Ron fully dimensional, I'm thrilled to be working again with Mark and Bob, and the welcome addition of the dynamic creative team Josh, Zane, Adam, and Zach into a world where anything is indeed possible. So that's pretty much the big news, is that not only are we going to see the comeback of Kim Possible, but it's going to be in the form of a live-action movie. Now, admittedly, this actually does seem a little bit familiar. Now, not entirely, but there is something like that that did happen in a bit of a similar step, where Cartoon Network actually did do a couple of live-action movies based on one of their animated series, which in this case is actually Ben 10, where they decided to go ahead and release two of them. But unlike Ben 10, they actually did that while the show was still on television, where with Kim Possible, now it's been a few years now, or several years actually, almost two decades even, where Kim Possible was on television. And I think that's probably one of the biggest reasons why they're actually doing this. It's actually because of nostalgia. Like, Disney wants to go ahead and try to capture some of that nostalgia money, and you can definitely tell that they are doing so, especially with bringing back animated series such as DuckTales, and even in the merchandising, you do see the comeback of the Disney afternoon shows, such as Tailspin, DuckTales, Gummy Bears, and so much more. So we are actually to the point where now the animated shows from the early 2000s, that's starting to enter into this the nostalgia category, and that could explain why they are actually going to be bringing back Kim Possible. But again, honestly, I do feel like there is one big thing, though, that does make it a little bit dangerous. The fact that Kim Possible is going to be coming back into a live-action movie. And that is the fact that it's going to be a Disney Channel original movie. Now, for me personally, that is the one element from Disney that I do not trust. That I try to stay far from it as possible. I don't even want to know what bullcrap they're doing with whatever dumb High School Musical or Camp Rock or Descendants crap they're doing. Just take that thing away from me. Like, that's kind of bottom of the barrel in terms of Disney quality, so I wouldn't be surprised if this Kim Possible movie would actually come out, and it wouldn't turn out to be as great as people would probably hope for, but it's kind of funny how, considering that it does have that connection with the animated series, there's already major hype that is actually going for it. But yeah, personally, I don't really have much of a commentary to put onto this. Like, I remember watching a few episodes of Kim Possible, but I wasn't the kind of person that actually did watch Kim Possible all the time. Nothing against Kim Possible, it's just that I guess I had other shows to watch. Like, okay, well, Kim Possible is on, well, let me just go ahead and watch SpongeBob instead. So, yeah, it is actually pretty interesting, and I know that there's a lot of people that are anticipating for it, but my recommendation is at least, like, yeah, you could be excited for it and you could watch it. Don't put your hopes too high, though. Don't expect something amazing. Because keep in mind, this is still a Disney Channel original movie. And there could be plenty of room where they could screw up. Now, I know that on the plus side, they do have the original creators working on the show. And hopefully that will help it stay true with the original series that it's based on. But I guess overall, we'll just have to wait and see with how this goes. Now, we don't really have a release date as of yet to know when is this live-action Kim Possible movie actually going to happen. But yeah, we'll just have to wait and see. And if it's going to meet the high expectations that people are going to have for this movie. Now, for our next story that we have right over here, admittedly, it was a little bit of a last-minute addition. I saw that on social media was kind of making its rounds late at night, and I was curious to know what it is, and funny enough, it was actually a video from Butch Hardman. Now, as you guys probably know, if you are an animation fan, then you are probably aware that Butch Hardman actually has a YouTube channel, a pretty popular YouTube channel at that, where he is, as I'm recording this, he's actually getting close to getting almost 500,000 subscribers, in which a lot of what he does in there is actually a whole bunch of what-if drawings and talking about what's going on behind the scenes with shows such as Fairly Odd Parents, Danny Phantom, and all that kind of stuff. And by the way, forgot to mention, for those of you who don't know who Butch Hardman is, well, he is actually known to be a bit of a Nickelodeon legend, where he has actually been credited to work on such shows as Danny Phantom, Tough Puppy. Recently, he created Bunsen is a Beast, and probably his biggest contribution of them all, the second longest running Nickelodeon animated series of all time, The Fairly Odd Parents. However, just recently, he actually put out a video that's pretty much making some big news. Like, this really is kind of a big bombshell, where Butch Hardman actually announced he's leaving Nickelodeon. Yes, after 20 years working with the studio, he decided that he's going to go and move on. He's no longer going to be staying with Nickelodeon, and he's going to take his career elsewhere. Now, of course, this is actually some major news right over here, and probably the first thing people want to know after hearing about this, you probably want to ask, what the fridge happened? And from there, I decided to go and listen to the video myself. And it's only 14 minutes long, but from there, Butch Hartman does actually explain what did happen. And honestly, it's not as dramatic as you actually think. It's just that Butch Hartman wants to go and explore more of his boundaries with his career. There's nothing bad that actually happened. He didn't get fired or anything. And no, Butch Hartman is certainly not someone that would actually go and do sexual misconducts or stuff like that. So he didn't get fired. And there's nothing wrong with Nickelodeon, apparently, where in the video itself, Butch Hartman said no negative criticism onto Nickelodeon. And he only gave the company just massive praise. Like, he had a blast throughout the 20 years that he worked on Nickelodeon, but he decided, you know what, I want to see where else can my career go outside of Nickelodeon. So that's pretty much why he left. And on top of that, he also decided to go and explain a little bit of a history on his career onto Nickelodeon, along with working on shows such as The Fairly Odd Parents and how he got his beginnings there and how he met with Fred Siebert and how Fairly Odd Parents started out as just a little cartoon and then eventually grew into the Nickelodeon series that we know today. And then he also mentioned about the other shows that he worked on, such as Danny Phantom, how it gained such a huge cult following. He also talked about Tough Puppy and how he recently had so much fun working with Bunsen is a Beast. But throughout all that, you might be wondering, now that Butch Hartman is no longer going to be working on Nickelodeon, what the fridge is he going to do now? What does the future hold for Butch Hartman? And he does explain that well. And for now, it seems like nothing big is really going to happen in his life. There's not going to be too big of a change. So far, he still has a lot of projects that he has to work on, a lot of secret projects with companies, and also some books that he would like to get published. And on top of that, he does have some show ideas that he would like to spread onto different studios to see which one would get picked up. And on top of that, he also explained a little bit about what's going to be happening with the shows that are on Nickelodeon. Currently, the only ones are pretty much Bunsen is a Beast and Fairly Odd Parents. Well, I think at this point it's pretty much safe to say that Fairly Odd Parents is still going to be continuing without Butch Hartman. I mean, it is pretty common that if a show is really popular and if the show creator decides to leave, well, then the show must go on and the show is still going to continue without him. While Bunsen is a Beast, I will say, however, that I think Butch Hartman mentioned that it's going to be running for that one season and that's pretty much it. I'm not 100% sure if he stated that the show is pretty much over after the one season or if it's going to continue without him, but either way, he pretty much said that he is done with Bunsen is a Beast despite it only being one episode. And overall, it is kind of surprising to actually hear that, considering that Butch Hartman really is one of the biggest players of Nickelodeon, where, again, 20 years working at the studio, like during many of its heights and many of its bottoms, where he is still there creating some big name animated series, including The Fairly Odd Parents and many of the other ones. And he has certainly left a major print in the studio, so it really is kind of shocking, but amazing at the same time that he would leave such a big legacy at Nickelodeon, and I'm glad that at least he left on a positive note, where when he came into Nickelodeon, it was great, and when he came out of Nickelodeon, it was great as well. Now, I will say, though, that when watching the video, there was one little part that I am actually kind of surprised about. Now, keep in mind, I'm not someone who always watches Butch Hartman's videos. Like, I will see a few from time to time, but not all the time. I'm actually quite surprised how Christian this guy is. Because you'll notice that throughout the entire video, he'll mention a lot about God. And that's probably the one person that he'll refer to so much is about God and how he thanks God for the blessings that he has gotten. And he is happy to know that God will be with him on his journeys and all that kind of stuff. And on top of that, he would also quote a lot from the Bible. Now, I'm not really judging, I'm not going to judge on Butch Hartman on anything like that. Like, if he is, like, a full-on Christian, then, like, you know, more power to him. Like, honestly, I just find it to be, like, a strange coincidence. And just a funny little thing that I kind of learned through watching that video. It's like, oh, okay, Butch Hartman really is a serious Christian. Okay, that's, you know, I thought I would just mention about that. But there's nothing wrong with it. It's perfectly fine. But, yeah, overall, this is kind of a big, shocking story to find out that Butch Hartman is leaving Nickelodeon after all these years. And yeah, who knows what the future holds? Maybe he'll come back to Nickelodeon to work on a show, or maybe we'll hear from him soon working on a big like this big new show that he has, maybe in another place. Maybe we'll actually hear Butch Hartman is going to be working on an animated series for Cartoon Network. Or maybe he's going to be doing an adult animated series, maybe for like TBS or for Fox or for something like that. We never know what's going to happen, but we'll see how it goes. And honestly, I do wish the best of luck for Butch Hartman on his future adventures. But yeah, this is pretty shocking news, but this is also pretty fascinating. But yeah, overall, I just want to say thank you so much, Butch Hartman, for all the great shows that you have done on Nickelodeon with The Fairly Odd Parents, with Danny Phantom, with Tough Puppy, and with Bunsen is a Beast. And I do hope for the best that your future will be bright and that God will help you out on a good path with your career. And so finally, we shall now go and end things off with Animat's Pick of the Week. And this week, we are going to be talking about Jordan Peele, which, if you guys know, recently he has become a very prominent director and a highly acclaimed director as that. Since last year, he made his directorial debut with Get Out, which got massive praise from critics and is currently running for several Oscars, including Best Director and Best Picture. So really, Jordan Peele is going into a brand new big direction with his filmmaking career. However, just recently, there was the Directors Guild Awards, happened at the same time or around the same time as the Annie Awards. And Jordan Peele actually did announce that he will no longer be acting. He is going to be now a full-on director. So he actually did state that it's not just Daniel Day-Lewis that's going to be retiring from acting, but also with Jordan Peele. Now, the reason why is it that Jordan Peele quit acting is actually the reason why I wanted to talk about this in the animation podcast and why I put it onto the Animat's Pick of the Week, because it really is quite a fascinating story. Now, it's not really that he decided that he is satisfied with his film career and he decided to leave. He kind of left acting in a pretty bad term, where there is one movie that absolutely turned him off and ultimately made his decision to go and leave acting for good so that he could just go and become a director, hopefully to bring out great movies such as Get Out. And the movie that I am talking about, of course, is the one film that would turn off any human being on this earth, The Emoji Movie. Yes, the most hated and one of the worst animated features of all time. It was so bad that it made Jordan Peele quit acting. Now, some of you might be wondering why. Why is it that Jordan Peele decided to go and quit acting because of the Emoji Movie? Like, why is it really that bad? Well, he actually has a little bit of an interesting relationship with it. And he actually did reveal it during the time when he actually won the Directors Guild Award for Best First Time Director. And he told a little bit of his story where he actually said that the Emoji Movie helped me quit acting. And the reason why, it was because It was during the production of the Emoji Movie, and Jordan Peele was offered the role of the poop emoji. Now, before I continue, I just want to say that, oh my god, that would have been a terrible idea. That would make Sony Pictures Animation look absolutely horrible. Because, seriously guys, just think about it. You got all the white actors playing regular emojis, and the one black guy that you come in to hire, you got him to play the poop emoji. Now, I'm just gonna call Sony just being stupid. Like, that was just an idiotic decision. Because I'm sure that it was unintentional that they would go onto that racist route. But anyways, let's just go back onto the story. So yeah, Jordan Peele was offered to go into the role of the poop emoji. And of course, like, since he has common sense, he would he heard his manager ask him about the offer, and he thought, okay, that is just absolutely messed up. Or, like, specifically, he said that it's completely effed up. So, afterwards, he thought about it, and all he says was just that he was gonna sleep on it. Where he didn't say yes, of course, but he did not say no immediately. He's just putting it in his consideration, and then he'll go to sleep, and maybe he'll find a better answer the next day. So, that's kind of the big thing. It's just tell Sony that he's gonna sleep on it, and he'll put it into consideration. Now, the next day, he is still thinking about maybe going into the Emoji Movie as the poop. But he's not saying yes, but he is curious about one thing. How much is he going to get paid for? So he called back his manager to see if what the offer would be. How much is it that they would pay him in order to play the poop emoji? But then his manager told him that, oh, well, it doesn't matter because you didn't get the part. They already assigned it to Patrick Stewart. And from there, that's when Jordan Peele decided, okay, you know what? Screw this. I'm done with acting, period. And honestly, looking at that, I do understand where Jordan Peele is going with it, because this kind of behavior that Sony Animation presented to him, or just Sony Pictures presented to Jordan Peele, is honestly very disrespectful, and ironically enough, it's treating him like paper, since it's already been said before that Sony Animation would treat their artists and animators like paper. It is very discouraging to know that they would do the same thing with their actors. That this is a clear sign that Sony Animation did not treat Jordan Peele with respect. They did not take his offer on saying that he's going to sleep on it. Where they were pretty much in the mentality of like, hey, do you want to be in this movie? No? Oh, you're not saying yes immediately? Okay, well, screw you. We're going to someone else. Hey, do you want to be in the Emoji Movie? You want to play a piece of crap? Okay? No? Okay? Are you thinking about it? No? Screw you? Okay. Like, they just want to go and say yes. And yeah, that is honestly very disrespectful of Sony for actually doing something like that, for not immediately taking up Jordan Peele's offer, that they don't look at him as a serious actor, or like they don't really see him as a human being. They're just looking at him like just a piece of the puzzle, and they just looked at it and think, nah, this piece, okay, you know what, maybe this piece fits, maybe it would have made it look nice, but screw it, that doesn't work. Here, I'll take this other piece and I'll just try to fit it in. You know, it's just, it really is kind of disrespectful the way that they approached Jordan Peele, just making that one quick offer, and then they said, okay, you know what, screw this, no, I'm just putting, you know, like, screw this, let's just go ahead and find someone else for it. But you know what is actually interesting also, is that during the ceremony, there was also another reference onto the Emoji Movie, where in the Directors Guild Award, there was Judd Apatow that came in, and he was the host during the Directors Guild Award, and he actually mentioned the Emoji Movie, which actually triggered that memory onto Jordan Peele, where he said, and I'm taking my quote here from Vanity Fair, where he said, when you have women directors, you get Lady Bird, Mudbound, and Wonder Woman. When you have male directors, you get the Emoji Movie, with a character who is literally a piece of crap. And yeah, like, honestly, when I read that, like, I was just there going, oh my god, That is one of the sickest burns that I've heard about the Emoji Movie. And let me just say, congratulations, Tony Leondis! You make all male directors look bad with your embarrassment of an animated feature. I hope you are ashamed of yourself for creating the Emoji Movie and that you never make something like that again. You really gotta improve yourself so that you don't do anything as stupid as the Emoji Movie. Just saying, dude. Get good, dude. Just get better, okay? Because seriously, that's not doing you or any male directors any favors. Okay, but anyways, overall, just looking at this, and the reason why this story just really is fascinating is that this really did leave a legacy of what the Emoji Movie is. Like, this is going to be how the world views the Emoji Movie, or at least how filmmakers, or like legitimate prominent filmmakers, are going to view the Emoji Movie. It's pretty much the bottom of the barrel filmmaking. It's pretty much nothing but a joke, where it's pretty much a punchline, where one of the worst things to happen in humanity is the Emoji Movie. And that's all it is. I mean, the thing is that now that it happened, now that it exists, people are just going to look back and think about how horribly, like how terrible and how horrible of an idea it is, and especially how horrible the execution it would be. Now, of course, a lot of people would say that there could have been ways to make an Emoji Movie legitimately good, but sadly, it's too late. Someone took it and they completely screwed it up. And that's what's happening right over here. The Emoji Movie is really going to leave a scar, not just for, like, male directors and for Tony Leondis, but also for, like, Sony Pictures Animation and for filmmaking in general. Like, where Hollywood is pretty much running out of ideas so much that they would be desperate enough to create a movie that is about emojis and stuff like that, and that they would rush production to the point that it would turn out to be such a mess that is universally hated by the public and is even regarded as right now one of the worst movies of 2017. In fact, it is a staple of the worst film of 2017 in anybody's list. So that's kind of the big thing, is that really, the Emoji Movie left nothing but a negative impact everywhere for filmmaking, for Sony Animation, and for the individuals associated with it, and for, like I said, for filmmaking in general. That the Emoji Movie is nothing but a joke, and its legacy is nothing but being a terrible movie that should never exist. And that is all that I got for this week, so thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can find more of my work on film-book.com. All you have to do is search for Mathieu Brunet or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at Animat505. Now, if you have listened to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, do you mind doing us a little bit of a favor and rate and review this episode? And if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, then hit that like button on our video and leave us a comment on your thoughts about the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening, and until next week, see you later, dudes.